Good morning, everyone. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out for another day. We will see her next week. She's had a good week to rest her voice. I think that's good. So in our coverage of the crisis in Libya, which we've been focusing on really since before I came back from vacation, we want to illuminate some pretty interesting numbers for a few moments this morning. Colonel Gaddafi's regime has always been a troublesome purveyor of oil. They're, I guess, the 18th largest oil producer in the world, and a willing buyer of weapons during the entire time that Gaddafi has been in power. But in the middle of the last decade, when Gaddafi very publicly dismantled Libya's nuclear program, the floodgates sort of opened for the colonel. He was suddenly a favored source of oil almost everywhere in the world and a prized customer for the sales of weapons. You never need much of an excuse to listen to Pavarotti, that's for sure. Who was selling? Well, not Lucio Pavarotti. But according to the Guardian newspaper, here's who was. This data is from 2009 and accounts for all export licenses granted. Silvio Berlusconi of Italy was authorized to do about $156 million worth of business, mostly in military aircraft, followed by Malta, $112 million in export licenses, although they aren't admitting to it. Germany sold $74 million worth of electronic jamming equipment, according to the reports. Russia, France, and the UK, and Spain were also big players. And in fact, as we've already noted, many of the nations now puzzling over how to impose a no-fly zone over Libya are the very ones who sold Gaddafi his air force, reportedly bombing his own people with those planes, even as we speak. Joining us now to discuss the mechanics behind the international flow of weapons to countries like Libya is Sergio Fenardi, director of TransArms, a research center for the logistics of arms transfers. Sergio, good morning.
Good morning.
So how would you characterize what happened in the arms trade when Libya suddenly went public about its nuclear program, dismantled it, and said, we want to join, we want to be your friends, we renounce terrorism, we're open for business?
Well, it happened that a good business for the arms manufacturer opened.
And so who rushed in? I mean, I've sort of mentioned a number of countries, but who rushed in and what did they sell?
Well, they sell a variety of weapons, small arm, light weapons, aircraft, bombs, torpedo, ships, and I think they cover all the military list of the Wassenaar arrangement. But I would like to add that we have to be careful with this data because the data that Guardian published are for agreement.
Right.
Agreement are not delivery, are a license that can stay for 5 or 4 years. And so, for example, in 2009, the agreement, the total agreement from European Union countries were worth more than 250 million euros, but the actual deliveries were far lower at 54, 55 million euros.
But certainly in the press in Italy, Berlusconi has been getting a lot of criticism for his close friendship with Colonel Gaddafi. It was partly a relationship involving weapons, but it also involved oil as well, right?
Yeah.
And are other governments rethinking the strategy of their arms sales in light of what's going on in Libya right now?
I think that they are revising their strategy just for sometimes.
You mean for temporarily?
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically, it doesn't really matter what's going on in the news. Arms get sold, people want to buy them, period, the end. There's very little that can really disrupt that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think the states and government think about the balance of power, the reason of state. This kind of consideration, they usually have no much consideration for human rights violations or similar topics. The problem is that they have to wait that the waters will calm down, and then I think, as it happened in the past, they will resort to other arms transfer, depending on what kind of government, of course, there will be.
But, you know, it's the case, even though Gaddafi was in power for 41 years and was a very sort of militant and militaristic style leader. It's not as though Libya was under any threat from anyone like Chad or Tunisia or any of its neighbors. I mean, the character of the arms purchases might have suggested to the sellers that this was a lot of military materiel, mostly for suppressing his own people.
Oh, I don't know. No, I think the goal of this shipment was, and the goal of the import was to have an army that can come back to the glorious times in which Libya was a real military power in the region. So when the embargo was lifted, 2004-2005, the goal of Gaddafi, I think, was to rebuild his army. And in part, and we have evidence of this, to grant his allies in Africa with weapons and, I mean, not only small arms or light weapons, so as a gift and as a way to influence the politics of other countries in Africa. We had, for example, a case that didn't go through but was imported for 500,000 Kalashnikov arranged by mobster in Italy from China, Norinco Kalashnikov. For 500,000 Kalashnikov, I mean, the Libyan army is 80,000 maximum, so it was evident that this import was actually destined for other countries, Chad, for example, or maybe Uganda or other country in
right. So Gaddafi himself was part of the transshipment and selling arms to destabilizing purposes in Africa. I guess the biggest irony, though, is that the nations that sold Gaddafi his air force are also the ones trying to figure out how to do a no-fly zone. Sergio Fernardi, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Sergio Fernardi is director of TransArms, a research center for the logistics of arms transfers. And you can hear in his voice there, no matter what's going on in politics or the headlines, arms sales and arms transfers go on. And let's take a look at some other stories we're following at 15 minutes after the hour. Looks like China's arms stockpile will be getting bigger. China plans to increase its defense spending by more than 12% this year, bringing the budget of the world's largest standing army to $91.5 billion. With the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the ROTC is coming back to Harvard after four decades. It was first banned from campus because of Vietnam War opposition, but in recent years the ban has been kept in place because of policies on gays in the military. 40 officers and sailors from the USS Enterprise have been reprimanded for making and showing crude, sexually explicit videos on board. Most received non-punitive letters of caution, but letters of censure have been recommended for Captain Owen Honors, the commander of the Enterprise, and three others. A lawsuit filed by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association claims a polar bear habitat set aside by the Endangered Species Act is too big. The industry group says the 187,000-square-mile reserve will cost it tens of millions of dollars. In a last-minute deal, the NFL Players Association has agreed to extend the current collective bargaining agreement and keep negotiating with league owners for at least one more day. And according to a new study, virginity is making a comeback. In the last decade, the number of people between the ages of 15 and 24 who say they've never had sex has risen from 22% to about 28%. Anjani Chandra is the lead author of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention study.
I think others who've been writing about this have hypothesized that it may relate to changing messages in sex education or just changing public health messages about sexually transmitted disease risk.
The survey is considered the largest and most reliable on sexuality. You're listening to The Takeaway, where you can always reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE if you want to tell us if you're a virgin or not. Coming up, the possible NFL shutdown isn't just about billionaires and millionaires. It's big business.